taught by Ryan, who's giving us his commentary on this week's Torah portion.
Shabbat Shalom. The name of this week's parasha is Korach, which means Korah, and covers Numbers chapter 16 through 18. Moses' authority was challenged by a faction led by Korah, son of Kohath, from the tribe of Levi, along with Dathan, Abiram, and On from the tribe of Reuben, along with 250 Israeli leaders. They objected to the restriction that priests could only come from Aaron's family line. Moses invited Korah and his followers to test their claim by bringing censers and burning incense to Adonai the next day to see whom God had truly chosen to serve him. Moses accused Korah and his followers of overstepping their authority and trying to usurp the priesthood instead of being content with their already privileged status. The duties and responsibilities of the Levites from Kohath's family were described in chapter 4. They were responsible for the care and transport of everything in the tent of meeting, including the Ark of the Covenant, the Table of the Presence, the golden lampstand, the golden altar, the bronze altar, and all the accessories and utensils. They could transport and set them up, but only the priests could use them. Korah wasn't content with that and thought he deserved more. Moses sent for Dathan and Abiram, but they refused the summons and accused Moses of being prideful and for bringing the Israelites out to die in the wilderness. This angered Moses, who asked Adonai to reject their offerings, since he had done them no wrong. When Korah and his followers presented their censers alongside Aaron and his censer at the tent of meeting, Adonai's glory appeared to all Israel, and Moses and Aaron pleaded for God to spare the Israelites. God told Moses to instruct everyone to back away from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, and the Israelites obeyed. Moses told the people that if Korah and his rebels died naturally, they would know that God hadn't sent him, but that if the earth were to open and swallow the rebels and all they have, then the rebels aren't from God. When Moses finished speaking, the ground suddenly opened, and all of Korah's followers, their families, and possessions fell into the earth while they were still alive, causing the people to flee in fear. Adonai also sent fire, killing the 250 men holding the censers. He then commanded Moses to tell Eleazar, Aaron's son, to hammer the censers of the dead rebels into metallic sheets covering the altar as a perpetual warning to the Israelites that only Aaron's descendants were permitted to burn incense before Adonai. Anyone who violated this would end up like Korah and his rebels. Unfortunately, instead of acknowledging Moses and reverencing Adonai, the people actually turn against Moses and Aaron the next day, blaming them for the rebels' deaths. God tells Moses and Aaron to back away from the people because he is prepared to destroy them. But Moses tells Aaron to take his censer and burn incense in it to make atonement for them because God had sent a plague among them. Aaron made atonement for the Israelites, and the plague was stopped, but not before 14,700 people had died, along with the dead from Korah's rebellion. In chapter 17, God commands Moses to have each of the 12 tribes of Israel bring him a staff, with the tribal leader's name inscribed on the staff. Aaron's name was written on the staff of Levi, which was placed with the other staffs in the tent of meeting. God declares that whichever staff blossoms will be the man that God chooses, and this is to put an end to the murmuring against Moses. When Moses checks the staffs the next day, only Aaron's staff has blossomed, and it even has ripe almonds on it. Moses shows all the staffs to the nation, and God commands him to place Aaron's staff in front of the testimony. In chapter 18, the Lord gives Aaron instructions regarding the duties of the Levites. They are responsible for the care and operation of the tent of meeting, but only Aaron and his sons were to minister at the altar and inside the curtain. If any other Levites attempted this, they would die. Likewise, only the Levites could work at the sanctuary. Anyone else presuming to do so would die. The Levites' offerings to Adonai included guilt, sin, and wave offerings, and the best olive oil, new wine, and grain. Only Levites who were ceremonially clean could eat from these offerings. They would also receive everything dedicated in Israel, including every firstborn human and animal. Firstborn sons were to be redeemed for 5 shekels at 1 month of age. However, the firstborn ox, sheep, and goats weren't redeemable, but were to be sacrificed on the altar and the meat given to the Levites. Adonai described these holy gifts as an everlasting covenant of salt. Since salt enhanced the flavor of food and was extremely durable, this signified this covenant's pleasantness and strength. The parasha ends with a description of the Levites' inheritance. They weren't given any land in Canaan, but God himself would be their inheritance. They would also receive the Israelites' tithes, from which they would tithe the first portion to Aaron. An important principle that we can take from this parasha is to reject the notion that we can come to God on our own merits or think to serve him on our own terms. The rebels learned this lesson the hard way. To be in a right relationship with God is to come to him in proper submission and reverence. Yeshua the Messiah is the Savior and Mediator of God's choosing. We dare not seek another or think that we can do it ourselves. We cannot make ourselves acceptable to God through performing good deeds, but only through Yeshua's righteousness. If we will humbly and gratefully accept that gift of salvation, we will find rest in him, for he is our portion. Shabbat Shalom.